It's late. Hello. Okay, this workshop is about having fun, suiting up and showing up. And we're going to talk about what we learned here in program that helps us in the outside world. It's kind of a step 12. But before we get started, I am going to do the serenity prayer. And then my co-presenter is going to read an announcement. So let's start with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay, are there any other compulsive ears here today besides myself? Okay. All right, I'm Suzanne. I'm a grateful compulsive eater. And to my left is Cheryl, and Nancy's going to help me. So before Cheryl reads an announcement, anytime you want to say something, please come up to the microphone and make sure you sign the release form and speak up in the microphone because this is being recorded. And if you're not in the microphone, the recording doesn't pick it up. Okay? So I'm going to pass it over to Cheryl for a second.
This isn't the announcement.
Okay. I'm just going to briefly tell you there's no taking of photographs in the room. This is being recorded. So in order for this recording to be posted on the website, please sign the release form. And that's the brief version because we don't have the announcement. Okay. So I am going to ask somebody from the audience to step up to the microphone. And I want to hear when you hear having fun, suiting up and showing up, what does that mean to you? Are there any volunteers?
Hi, my name is Deb. I'm from Thousand Oaks and I suit up to show up every single
day. Hi, Deb.
Hi. And to me, what that means is always being present. And when I'm not present, checking in with my higher power to make sure I'm present, to call my sponsor, use the phone. But to me, really suiting up and showing up is just being available. And like one of the things that I've said to myself in the past couple of years, in another program, every year I set a word of intention, and my word of intention is typically willing, because that's how I show up, to be willing. But this year, because of family circumstances, I had to pick a different word, and that was boundaries. So that my boundaries were very well protected. That's how I sit up and show up.
All right. Thank you. And before I start to share and present, Nance, you're going to read a reading from As Bill Sees It.
Good afternoon. My name's Nance. I'm a compulsive eater. Page 254 out of Bill Sees It. Satisfaction of Right Living. How can you hear? Okay. Thanks. Okay. Satisfaction of Right Living. How wonderful it is, the feeling that we do not need to be specially distinguished among our fellows in order to be useful and profoundly happy. Not many of us can be leaders of prominence, nor do we wish to be. Service gladly rendered, obligations squarely met, troubles well accepted or solved with God's help, the knowledge that at home or in the world outside, we are partners in a common effort. The fact that God's sight, all human beings in God's sight, all human beings are important. The proof that love freely given brings a full return. The certainty that we are no longer isolated and alone in self-constructed prisons. The surety that we have fit, that we can fit and belong in God's scheme of things. These are the satisfactions of right living for which no pomp and circumstance, no heap of material possessions could possibly be substituted. Sorry. Okay, there you go.
Okay. Thank you, Nance. Okay. How many of you, and I'm Suzanne, I'm a grateful compulsive eater, And I really, truly mean that. How many of you, and I want a show of applause because I can't see your hands, and on the audio, they won't be able to see your hands either. With, so they'll be blind on the website as well as I am. All is fair, right? I get to laugh at myself. I have a show of applause. How many of you used to hear, I get to suit up to show up? I have to suit up to show up? How many of you have heard that? Okay. Okay, then. How many have not heard that? Okay, thank you for your honesty. Anyone else? Okay. So when I came into the program, briefly, I'll just say this. I had been in another program, kind of like our own, has nothing to do with sister program in another country. And that sponsor was really good at teaching me to be of service. I had to get out on myself and get into service. So she was really good at that. She taught me a lot of things. She also taught me a lot of what not to do with sponsoring. And she and I have discussed that, so we're good. But I also observed, because I am a great observer, is that in her case, and this is just taught me, that the promises came true for her in her family life, but at the meeting level, she was still not... there was a difference. And a lot of times in the meeting level, we're all one way, we haven't gotten there with our families. Well, she was the other way around. So she was very dictatorial and bossy and stuff like that. And she taught me not to do that, right? So when I came in this program, I knew the importance of service. And I knew that I needed recovery, the physical. In my case at that time, it was more spiritual and emotional, and the physical was third, believe it or not. And I knew that I needed to work on myself to be a good example and a good fellow in the rooms, but I also needed to take that out into my life and the rest of my life. I was taking care of my mom. I did not have the patience. I really didn't. I have patience for the big stuff, but not for the little stuff. And my mom was the other way around, and I was newly blind caring for her, and I needed a lot of patience. And having sponsees at that time really taught me a lot of patience. But I learned that in the rooms, you know, because people had to have patience with me because I couldn't see, and they had to explain stuff to me, and they had to figure out a service commitment for me because some of the stuff I couldn't do. Later on, I figured out I could have done some of that, but I was too afraid. And some people had told me, this program is probably not for you because you have to write and you can't read your writing. But you know what? Someone else told me, they mean well, you'll figure it out. And I did. So I got to learn here. I get to go to the meeting, even though I don't want to, I need to. And all that needing and wanting can get me nowhere. I had to do it. So I went to meetings because they said, suit up and show up. And when I got to do that, I got to be a better person and to learn patience. And I was able to take that into the rest of my life. And here I got service commitments that I never thought I would have because, you know, I could hear the voices in my case, my maternal grandmother saying, you're no good. You'll never amount to anything. You're a bad seed. How many of you remember The Bad Seed, the movie? Okay. All right. I was a bad seed. And for those who don't remember or don't know, it was about a little girl who was really, really bad. I mean, she'd kill people. I was a bad seed in my grandmother's eyes. And I could hear those voices. And so I did not want to take service commitments because I'm not perfect. And it had to be perfect because I came into this program a perfectionist and I didn't know it. My father was a perfectionist. And even though he did not try to mold me in his image, I still got that. And I didn't know that till I got here. So I couldn't do things perfectly. I was afraid to take service commitments because I didn't want to make mistakes. But along the way, I had people who take me aside and said, you can do it this way. You can do it that way. One of my friends said, darling, you're our new intergroup rep. I'm like, who, me? Yeah, you. I'm like, how am I going to do it? I can't read the announcements. You'll memorize it. But it will be perfect. Who cares? Just do it. And then the same person said, you're going to lead a meeting. And I'm like, I can't do that. Yes, you can. And then I did that. And then someone else took me aside and said, you're going to become an area rep and you're going to be a delegate after that. And I'm like, I can't do that. I mean, I was shaking inside. She did not know this, but I was like shaking. I got a horrendous headache. And I said, I cannot do that. And she said, yes, you can. No, there's no service commitment. You do it by yourself. So I did do it. Why do I share this? Because it's like suiting up and showing up the rest of your life. Because I was able to get out of my comfort zone, and trust me, I had to get out of my comfort zone. When I came in here, I would rather be in the back of the room behind something so no one can see me, because I couldn't see any of you, so you shouldn't be able to see me, right? All is fair in love and war, and I didn't want anybody to see me. And I thought, nope, I have to be seen because I am an isolator in my disease. And a lot of people would find that hard to believe, but I am an isolator. And so I needed to get out of my comfort zone, and I did take these service positions. And because I did that, I was able to do other things outside of the program, which I never, ever, ever would have been able to do. One of them is to go to a rock concert by myself 5 times and not even think twice about it. I would not have done that when I used to see. Ever. It would not even occur to me. And I wanted to go. I didn't have any to go with. And I just thought, I'm going. Because this program taught me, act as if, suit up and show up. So I did. I suited myself up. I made a couple of phone calls on how it was going to happen. And I went. And I had to have that trust in my higher power that would turn out okay. I just went to see a musical Sunday by myself. I took myself. My husband didn't want to go. Not a problem. I can go by myself because I know that I'm not alone. So how many of you have taken that leap of faith and have done something that you didn't think you could do once you're in the program? Okay. Then you guys know what I'm talking about. The other thing that I have done is I live in a condo association, and my husband is also blind, and he has tried to get on the board, and someone said, you can't, you're blind. I actually said that. No, you can't do it. I happen to have a couple of their blind friends, and they're their presidents of their whole HOA associations, and they're large complexes. I live in a little teeny tiny complex, 27 units, and it really eked me. I just kind of like, and I thought, you know what? They don't understand, and they don't have to. It's like being a compulsive eater trying to explain to someone who's not a compulsive eater how we have to eat and why we do this. It's like, it's the same thing. They don't understand. And I had to practice my program, and I had to have patience and tolerance for these few people that said no. So somehow I was able to finagle my husband to get on the board. And you know what? They ignored him. It was as if he wasn't there. But I have found a way to finagle myself into a position where I have a voice on that board. And I was told, you're not on the D, you have no voice. And I said, I live with my husband and I have a voice. And I said, I will fix it. I'll get on the deed and I will do it. I never would have even spoken up. Heck, I wouldn't even have gone to the HOA meeting because I'm not wanted, I'm not needed, and you're definitely not wanted there. And this one person was loud and clear and also was said, this building is not for disabled people. You should go live in assisted living. And I said, no, thank you. And I had to pray for this person for 2 weeks. Actually, it was longer. And, you know, I also have a neighbor that does not appreciate the fact that I'm above her. And I have had to really work on that. You know, I get to take this program with me in all areas of my life. This is actually like a 12-step meeting, workshop. You know, I need to practice these things in all areas of my life. And when I suit up and act as if, my higher power will give me the tools to deal with people, places, things, and situations. And, you know, at first I really ignored the situation, and then it really got to me with the situation downstairs. So I thought, what can I do? Forget the person downstairs, but what can I do? What's my part? Well, before I moved in with my husband, I wanted carpeting in my room, and that's a long story, but I should tell that. I said, we need to get carpeting in my room. Well, let's go buy an area rug. And so we went to buy the area rug. And I said, this is not big enough. We need carpeting. No. We're here. We're doing it now. And that was the way my husband was before. Let's just do it now. I don't want to do anything else. Well, the one area rug was not enough. The whole condo has tile. And she can hear every step I take. And so, thank you. And so my husband learned not to be so compulsive because I have been a good example, not because I've beaten him over the head with it, but because I was a good example of let's pause. You want to pause for the miracle? How about pause for an answer? Pause first before I make a compulsive decision. And that decision of just buying the area rug because it was there at that moment was the wrong decision. But I didn't say much because I thought, he will find out. I don't have to have a showdown here in the area rug showroom. But I did call my sponsor and I said, we bought the area rug. She said, don't do that. And I said, you know what? I can't, as much as some people might, you know, think I am this way, I can't micromanage him. Sometimes I'd like to, but I can't and I shouldn't, right? It's not good. And so I said, no, you know what? He's going to find out. Maybe this will work out. She says, don't do it. It's just a mistake. I said, I agree, but I got to find out. I have to allow the person to be wrong sometimes. You know, I can't always know the answer and I don't always have to be the one. And so we got that carpet, and that was a big mistake. And I said one day to him, I have to put carpeting in here over the tile or remove the tile because it's not good for my mental health and it's not good for the person downstairs. I have to be a good neighbor. Even if I got down to 30 pounds, it would not be good enough for her. And so we got carpeting. And it helped. It did help. But, you know, she's still difficult at times. But, you know, thankfully, thank you, higher power, I haven't heard from her in about 2 years. But I still think about her, and I'm still aware I need to be a good neighbor. She does not have a program, but I do. But this goes back to the meeting level. I showed up. I suited up. I acted as if. I was able to get out of my comfort zone. I was willing to listen. I was willing to take direction. And I was willing to take that into my outside life. And I'll just close with this one little story. I went to the supermarket one day. And I got in this line. The person helping me shopping put me in the wrong line. And she could see, right? And so, at least I think she could. Like the blind leading the blind. Of course, I lead my husband. Everybody says I'm his guide dog. So that's okay. So it said no cash back, credit cards only, and I needed cash back. But the person helping me knew that, but maybe they were distracted, I don't know. So I wanted cash back, and it wouldn't go. It hit like, and the person said, you can't get cash back in this line. I'm like, okay. So this guy behind me said, you people, and I can't believe it. Why are you trying to get cash back when the sign says right there, no cash back? I didn't know that. Even the cashier didn't tell me there was a sign there. And I said, oh, okay, I'm trying to hurry. So I had two transactions, which I'm sure he really hated that. And my cane, everybody saw my cane, right? It folds up. I had it under my arm. So I took out my cane and unfolded it. And he said, oh, my God, I didn't see that. And I said, neither did I. And he just started laughing. And we had a good laugh. That's program. I didn't know how to deal with people like that. I probably would not have said anything. Or I would have said, you're right, it's all my fault. It's all my fault. You're right. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. It's my fault. I shouldn't have come to the store by myself. I had no one to go with me anyway. I shoulda, coulda, woulda. And today, thank you. Today, I don't do that. But it all goes back to what I was willing to learn at the meeting level. So we're going to have Cheryl here to share for another 15 minutes. And then we're going to open up for sharing and questions. But the story here is when we learn how to act with dignity and love, patience, and tolerance in the rooms, because let's face it, we're all crazy. Some of us are crazier than others, and some of us are crazier other days than others, and thank God we're not all that crazy on the same day, right? So we take what we learned from the meeting by willing to get out of ourselves. We take it back to our homes with our families and share that. And they don't even know it, but they do. They do. And we get to take that out in the community because we might be the only example of a 12-step program that they'll ever see or experience, or in my case here, or feel. So please do that. Suit up and show up. Be happy. Pause for those miracles. And just remember, act as if, fake it till you make it, and keep coming back. Okay. Nancy's going to do one more reading, and then we'll have Cheryl share.
Sorry about that.
Thanks, Suzanne. Nance, compulsive eater. Phil sees it. 303. Loving advisors. Had I not been blessed with wise and loving advisors, I might have cracked up long ago. A doctor once saved me from death by alcoholism because he obliged me with face up to the deadliness of that malady. Sorry, I'm kind of... Another doctor, a psychiatrist later on helped me save my sanity because he led me to ferret out some of my deepest defects. From a clergyman, I acquired the truthful principles by which AA's now try to live. But these precious friends did far more than supply me with their professional skills. I learned that I could go to them with any problem, whatever. Their wisdom and their integrity were mine for the asking. Many of my dearest AA friends have stood with me in exactly this same relation. Oftentimes, they could help where others could not, simply because they were AAs.
Thank you, Nance. And now I give you Cheryl.
Enjoy it.
Hi, everyone. Good to be here. Good to see you. I am definitely a grateful compulsive overeater, living in recovery today. And the reason I say that is because this is a program that teaches you in a safe environment how to be honest and the courage to volunteer, the courage to help other people. And that does reflect out into the world. My outer world outside of program got better, so much better. Well, my outlook was better, obviously, when you're abstinent. But I remember my service journey. I was in the program probably maybe 4 years before I got up enough nerve to say I wanted to volunteer for something. And I had been to a couple conventions by then, and I remember thinking, okay, if I'm going to help, where are my skills? You know, I thought I had to have some kind of special skills to volunteer, and I'm looking at the boutique, and I'm looking at the literature, and all these others, and listening to people step up and share. And I think, oh, yeah, no, I couldn't do that. I couldn't lead a workshop. I couldn't share. But maybe I can do the boutique. I know clothes. And so I volunteered. I remember really walking by and saying, oh, I could do that. And that was a miracle for me to say, I can do that and be confident in myself. Okay, yeah. And even after those few years, what made me say that is everybody in this program is so helpful and friendly and supporting that I did, even if I screwed up the money or something, I didn't think I was going to be yelled at I knew I was going to be supportive and somebody was going to say, oh, here's the way we do it. You know, this might work better for you or something like that. And I appreciated that so much. And once I experienced that in service, I felt like showing up and suiting up and showing up more often. I thought, oh, this is kind of fun. Okay, I'm part of it. And if I'm here at the boutique and everybody walks by, I get to talk to everybody. I get to see more people. Okay, well, I am definitely a people person. And that really rang true in my life that I realized that even more during COVID. It was like, I can't be around people. I miss everybody. But thank goodness for Zoom and Phone Bridge. But I went from the boutique. Before that, I'd already volunteered at my meeting because I felt safe in the meeting because it was a small meeting. And they voted me in as intergroup chair after my first year, I think it was. And I thought, oh, God, what do I do? What do I do? That sounds too important. You know, I have to know something. How can they think I already know how to do this? And, well, they didn't think that. I was thinking I was supposed to know how to do that. And of course, the same thing happened. I was pleasantly surprised that other people before me volunteered to walk before me, showed me how to do these things. And, oh, this is what you do. You are representing of your, you go to intergroup meetings and you do the announcements. And, okay, well, I think I can do that. And I learned along the way. I learned along the way because this was a safe environment. I wasn't willing before I got into program to really be open out in public. It was always, well, they know how to do it better than I do, so I just won't say anything. I won't volunteer. I won't. Volunteering was scary. I was always, if I was in a room or a group or even at work or something at a class or whatever, and they wanted volunteers or they wanted somebody to, you know, come up and do whatever or even help pass out papers, I was always crunched down in the back like, okay, you don't see me, you know, because I was afraid to get out there. I was afraid to get, my box was like, it was like this. I was a mother, it was super small, and I was a mother, and I went to work, and I did my mothering thing, and I didn't want anybody to ever ask anything else of me. That took a lot of me, I will have to admit. But you always have more. You just have to be willing. And I wasn't willing because I didn't have the confidence. So I moved from meeting in a group rep. First, I think I was a literature person. And then I was in a group rep. Then I was secretary. And then I ended up being vice chair of our inner group. And then chair. And all along, I was gaining more and more confidence because it was a safe environment. And I really learned how to spread my wings and think, oh, yeah, I can do that. I don't have to have a special skill. I can just ask. And asking isn't stupid. Before it was like, oh, they're going to know I'm stupid. I don't know anything if I ask. And that's not the case. People are so willing to help you. I'm willing to help people now. I mean, and it's not that I know everything. It's just that if I've done it before and they ask, I'll help. I'll share how I did it. And you can do it the way you want. And I remember as I went to convention more and more, I started volunteering not ahead of time because I didn't want to commit. Just in case I chickened out. But I remember suiting up and showing up. I'll tell you, I was a single mom of three kids, and I really barely couldn't afford to come to these conventions. And when I found out that if I volunteered to be a delegate, that they would help pay my airfare, I'm like, oh, that's a way to go. I don't know what being a delegate is all about, but it has something to do with the business portion of it. And of course, I wasn't business oriented. Like I said, I was a single parent, three kids. I had two jobs, and they were, one of them was school bus driving, and one was working at 7-Eleven in the deli at the time. Yeah, well, that could be an origin story right there from eating everything that I could see in sight. But anyway, and I just worked my way up through that. And when I get to convention, I thought, well, I'm already suited up. I'm already here. I see people that I've seen before. Okay, I'm feeling a little comfortable. I'll just, if I hear, I told God, I said, okay, I prayed. I said, if you want me to help, then help me to hear, you know, let me see what committees need to be helped and where the help needs to be. And he never disappointed me. It was just like, okay, I hear you. Okay, they need help over in the raffle or they need help over here. And I remember every year just gaining and gaining confidence. And in the outside world, I did the same. I was the person who raised their hand, like at a class that I'd be taking for work or something. I'm the one that would say, oh, yeah, I'll help. I'll set up the chairs. I'll get the coffee, you know, because I'd been trained. This program trained me. I needed training. I was just a little baby. I had been doing things my own way up until then. And that just kept me at a certain, I swear, age level because I never challenged myself. I know how to move chairs. I knew how to make coffee. I know how to talk to people now. The 12 steps and 12 traditions has helped me in all areas of my life. It's just so true. And then I remember a turning point in 2017 when our then food chair, her co-chair didn't show up. And so she was kind of panicky and running around. I remember standing there with her and I said, well, I can help, you know. So I did whatever she wanted me to do. And then afterwards I said, do you have anybody to take over for next year? And she said, no, I don't know what happened to my co-chair. And I said, well, I can do it. I could be chair next year. I couldn't believe that came out of my mouth. Oh, my goodness. What am I doing to myself? The food is so important to us. We're foodies. It's important. That's what I picked to step up again from meeting level and intergroup is to be food chair. Okay. Or from boutique too. And so I was nervous, but people before me helped me out. And the thing that gave me, I walked away from that. How much? Oh, thank you. I walked away from volunteering for that thinking, A, what did I do? And also forgot my train of thought now. I also thought, what did I think? I just lost my train of thought.
Your next commitment?
Huh?
Your next commitment?
Oh, yeah, my next commitment. Okay, I know. At the convention, I was having so much fun. The more service I did, the more I showed up, the more I had so much fun making so many new friends, seeing everybody. Every year I love coming to this because people have been in here as long as me and longer. And that is just amazing. There is no other program. There's a million diets out there where you can lose weight, but as far as I know, there is no other longevity except for in this program. And I think that is a miracle. But anyway, I remember praying one night before I went to bed at a convention. I think it was in 17 or something, or 18. No, it was in 17, yeah. And I was taking care of some stuff at the convention, sitting with a group of people at a table, and stupid waiters, sorry. We've always had really good staff and really good food, but they kept putting out flavored creamers and little sugar packets. And people would come and tell me, did you know that there's some? Okay, fine. So I got to the point where I didn't even look for anybody. I just would take it and take it back to the kitchen. You know, it was just like, okay, whatever, you know. They're busy doing other stuff.
And I must have caught somebody's eye because somebody who will remain nameless, who was in here a few minutes ago, who was ended up being the chair of the convention in 18, asked me if I'd be her co-chair. We were sitting at the table at the time. And I thought, oh my goodness. I prayed the night before. The night before, that's what I was going to say. God, help me be of more service. This is so much fun, but I need your help to get out of my box some more. Be careful what you pray for. Oh my gosh. If you're not ready to commit to it, be careful because he hears you. And this gal asked me, sitting across the table from me, would you consider being my co-chair for convention next year? And that would have been 2018. And I said, well, yeah, I could need to think about it, you know, and I was just all nervous. I said, can I let you know when I get home from convention? And she was nice enough to say, yeah, okay, yeah, call me. So I thought about it and I thought about it and I couldn't stop thinking about it and obsessing over it. And oh my gosh. And then I thought, well, she was co-chair the year before. She'd be able to help me. She can show me what to do. She knows I haven't done this before, just like I haven't done everything else before. But I happened to suit up and show up, and she caught me. at a good time. So I had just prayed, like I said. So I called her after I got home from convention. I said, yeah, I said, but I don't know what I'm doing. And she said, that's okay. I'll help. And we'll do it together along the way. And we did. And I had so much fun. Oh my gosh, it was so much fun. And then the next year I became chair. And that was fun and taxing and tiring. But I'm so glad I did it with a lot of help from this gal right here. I didn't have a co-chair. And so she was the one that got calls all the time. She was very helpful. Thank you. Anyway, suit up and show up. Do it for yourself, but be there for other people. And take it into the outside world because you won't believe what you can do just from learning how to do it in a safe environment, a safe place, a non-judgmental place like our program. I wish everybody could experience it. So anyway, thank you for listening.
Okay, we're going to do one more reading, and I'm going to take 5 minutes to share on the fun part. And I will see the first fun.
All righty. Use the glasses. I'm not much of a multitasker, no thank you. So am I. Okay, the shared gifts. AA is more than a set of principles. It is a society of alcoholics in action. We must carry the message, else we ourselves can wither and those who haven't been given the truth may die. Faith is more than our greatest gift. It's sharing with others is our greatest responsibility. May we of AA continually seek the wisdom and the willingness by which we may well fulfill that immense truth which the giver of all perfect gifts has placed in our hands. Thanks.
Okay. I'm going to speak a couple of more minutes, and then I want people to come up to the microphone and share or ask questions. So the title of the workshop is Having Fun, and you're thinking, where's the fun part? When I came into the program, my first sponsor was very service-oriented as well as my former sponsor in the other program. And she said, I am picking you up half an hour early because I do service at the meeting. I said, great. And I got to observe the love between everybody. It was a large meeting, and there was a coffee person and a setup person and a microphone person and the literature person, and so on and so forth. I got to experience the camaraderie between them, the love, the dedication, the devotion, and they were laughing. they're having so much fun just being together. And see, I didn't have that the last 5 years before I came into program. I was newly blind. I was by myself with my mom. And yeah, I did have some friends that were helpful with some joy and happiness, but I was not that joyful. I just wasn't. I wanted to be, and I got to see that. I kind of was like an observer sitting back and watching all this, or in my case, listening. But I got to feel that energy. They had fun. She had fun getting out the microphone and the speakers and, you know, joking with the coffee person. And that was a good example for me. And when I took service positions, like as a delegate, I got to meet so many people I never would have met. And I got to work with these people. And Wednesday night and Thursday night, we can go out and have dinner on our own. And we'd go out in groups and we'd get to know each other and we would laugh about life. We'd laugh about program. We'd laugh about food stories or just, it was just a lot of fun and helpful. So where it helped me to have fun in other parts of my life is my husband and I, as I said, are both blind. And would you say blind? And there is a lady that organizes dinners or luncheons with a bunch of other blindies, as we call them. And she may be one of us. She's very thin, but she might be one of us. And she's used to always lecture me about, why can't you have one bite? It's organic. She's very picky about her food. It's organic. And I said, would you say that's an alcoholic? Well, that didn't work because but you're not an alcoholic. Finally, I had to find another way of telling her that the food was really, the flour and sugar really have an effect on me. And I finally got through to her after like 3 or 4 years. And sometimes going with my husband to these luncheons was not that pleasant because most of them are obese and compulsive eaters. One guy would, and I literally, this would happen. He'd order one lunch, and the hostess would come over and say, I'll just call him Joe Blow. Hey, Joe, I've got your next lunch. And she'd come back 20 minutes later. Joe, I've got your third lunch. So was it really pleasant for me to go and be part of? Because I don't partake in that stuff, and I don't do that. And I had to have a little talk with myself and say, what is my purpose in going? It's not for the food, yes. We would go to places where there are good meals, but that wasn't really the purpose. It was to be part of. And I didn't want to be part of the food porn or hysteria, but I wanted to be there just as a person. And once I saw that, I was able to have fun. I made friends with a couple of people. In fact, this one lady and I went shopping together for clothes, which I do like to do. Just the two of us. I never would have done that because I would not have met her had I stopped going because she started going a couple of years ago. I would not have met her. And we've been really good friends. She's partially sighted, so it's kind of fun, the blind leading the blind. But she can see a little bit. But I started to have fun going to these events once I put aside my thoughts of, what am I doing here? I don't belong. In fact, the woman said, don't invite Suzanne. She's not one of us. She doesn't fit in. She's a loner. She left that message on my husband's phone, and he played it for me. And I said, you know, in a way, she's right. I don't fit in. I wasn't born blind. I'm not partaking in the food. And my husband's not. He doesn't partake in that type of stuff. I really don't belong. But where do I belong? I just wanted to have fun. So once I changed my perspective, I thought, I showed up and had fun service positions that I didn't think I'd have fun at, right? So I did do that. And I started having fun. And, you know, it's all the perspective. I like to say hope. Having optimistic perspective every day. Thank you. And it starts at the meeting level. I go back to the meeting and suiting up and showing up. You can have fun. It's a mindset. But start at the meeting. Volunteer to do something. My favorite meeting closed because nobody would take the meeting over. So it closed. So start at the meeting level. Get out of your comfort zone. Have that attitude, that open mind of, I'm going to make this fun. It's not drudgery. We get to do it. And you will have those miracles. You could take that and have fun in places you may not have thought of having fun. So please go back to your meetings and suit up and show up and be willing to give back to our program and other areas of your life. So thank you for letting me do that other shift. All right. Who wants to talk about having fun, suiting up and showing up? Who wants a question or a share? Please come up and sign in first and give us your first name. Thank you.
I'm Susan, compulsive overeater. And way I have fun is I've been on this program, got on this program, thank goodness, before I started having all 19 grandchildren and 5 greats. And it kept me healthy. So some of the fun I can share with you is crawling through those tubes. And they don't cushion them, you know, chasing after a grandchild that will not come back. You know, taking a couple of grandkids up to San Francisco and wearing them out. They got back and told their mom, I'm tired. You know, she took us all over this place, you know, and chasing them and having fun with them. And then I got this wonderful job that I could travel all over the world. And I worked on military bases, and I mostly worked with little kids. So I had fun with them out on the playground. I did puppet shows. I went on excursions. You know, I decided I was going to learn how to surf. Because just basically because I want this gal that ran the surfing place wanted, she had somebody who could take a video of me, and I wanted to show my daughters what I could do. And that's how I learned to surf. It was in Hawaii, so the water was warm, and that wasn't in a place where there are huge waves. But I did that, you know, and I did a bungee thing. And I did in Japan, they had a canyoning thing where you dress this and put this stuff on, and you go down this canyon, and then they drop you down a waterfall, you know. But not to be too culture, but Japanese really build things to last and safe. So anyway, okay, thank you. So anyway, I'm just I'm healthy. I'm 81, and I'm still going, You know, so that you know, this is what I wouldn't be doing it all, any of it without this program, okay? So it kept me healthy and inside too. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Daniel. All right, someone else would like to share? Come on, share it or wear it.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Michelle.
Compulsive eater. Thank you for your shares. And I agree, like being of service is so much fun. And I've been in CHOW for a long time now, and I lost my weight very quickly, and then I didn't know how to deal with being in that body, and so I slipped and slid, and but I left for 1 week, and I'm not going to talk about food, but I was looking for fun in food again, like that's my disease. And I love fashion. I love to dress up. I am a little plug for the body image workshop because I'm learning to understand that I'm shaped like a woman and not a beanpole. And so I'm trying to embrace. And I love clothes, and I love the boutique. I mean, many of you guys know that I chaired it a couple of years ago, and now I'm a worker bee, and just sharing what I know with the next, because we do have a rotation of service, and it's so much fun, and it's so much fun to see people excited about wearing clothes and putting on clothes. When I used to cry when it was time to get dressed, I used to be like, I have 5 sizes in my closet, nothing fits right. It was never my problem, don't you know? And I had so much anger with, like, the people that made jeans because I have big thighs. And it was just, I just didn't understand, you know? I just didn't understand that, like, all of the food I was putting in my body to soothe was also, it was like self-sabotage, you know? And I'm just so happy to be here. I'm happy to say that if I'm not in a workshop today. I'll be in the boutique, and I'll definitely have my dancing shoes on tonight. Thanks.
Thank you, Michelle. I think dance time. So one more. Who else would like to share some fun?
My name is Rhonda, and I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, your mom.
Hi. Thank you, ladies, for leading this workshop. It was really good. What really caught me was earlier on in your first talk, Suzanne, about acting as if. I didn't understand what that meant. I thought that meant I was supposed to pretend to be somebody that I wasn't. And so when you were talking about it today and what it really is I've learned that I don't have to be paralyzed by the fear or succumb to the defects that I might want to act out in any given moment with any given person, situation, circumstance. But if I'm dealing with my daughter and I'm not having patience, I can pause because it is a miracle and say, what would my actions or reactions be if I were demonstrating patience? It took me a long time to get to this type of like thinking and behavior, but it really helped me. And then I learned to be my authentic self. And then that takes a lot of courage because I was covered up with the food and all the things that goes along with the isms of this disease. And being my authentic self led to joy, happiness, freedom. I talked about that in another workshop earlier, which allowed me to start having a lot of fun. And so I don't have any really specific stories about fun, but I find that I get to be more silly and more free and more present with my children. And I get to carry this outside the rooms, like you mentioned, Suzanne, and it makes a difference. Particularly where we say we abstain from negative thinking, you know, one day at a time. That's been a big one for me. So that's all I have to share. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, I hate to say this, but we better. There's one more reading, and we'll close with a serenity prayer. And I'm sorry, everybody. I should have not shared the second time. I apologize. Yeah.
I think no.
It was good. If you like it, I'll get up.
There you go. All right. 332, Bill sees it. I am responsible when anyone anywhere reaches out for help. I want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I am responsible. Declaration of 30th Anniversary International Convention, 1965. Dear friends, since 1938, the greatest part of my AA life has been spent in helping to create, design, manage, and ensure the sovereignty and effectiveness of AA's World Service, the office of which has enabled our fellowship to function all over the globe and as a unified whole. It is no exaggeration to say that under their trustees, these all-important services have accounted for much of our present size and overall effectiveness. The AA General Service Office is by far the largest single carrier of the AA message. It has well related AA to the troubled world in which we live. It has fostered the spread of our fellowship wherever. Everywhere AA World Service Inc. stands ready to serve and the special needs of any group or isolated individual, no matter the distance or language. Its many years of accumulated experience are available to us all. The members of our trustees. The members of our trusteeship, the General Service Board of AA, will in the future be our primary leaders in all of our world affairs. This high responsibility has long since been delegated to them. They are all the successors in world service to do Dr. Bob and me, and they are directly accountable to AA as a whole. This is the legacy of world service responsibility that we've
Alzheimer's are leaving to you. Yeah. Are Spanishing. Sorry, Suzanne, I haven't pushed it faster. The AA of today and tomorrow, we know that you will guard, support, and cherish this world legacy as the greatest collective responsibility that AA has ever came, has ever can have. Ours in trust and in affection, Bill. It's a long and short.
That was long. Short, have fun, we're not a glum lot, carry the message, get involved. And don't forget the summer tradition. Let's stand and do the serenity of prayer, and then we have to get out of here. Yep, okay. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things that cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you. Be done. Amen.